we all have a technology that identifies if a child has dyslexia or has autism or ADHD or dyspraxia, any type of learning difference. It'll identify it. Then once it's identified, it creates a profile. That profile begins scaffolding different elements of knowledge based on the child on multiple perspectives. So it's not just, okay, here's an application that's going to identify dyslexia from the child's direct input. It identifies it from the child's input, identifies it from the input of observations from the parent, from the teacher, from the healthcare worker, from the social worker, from the psychologist, from any person that's actually working around the child. All those perspectives are collected and aggregated to form a single point of truth.
Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast with Winifred A. Winston and LaDerek Horn, the show that unapologetically focuses on helping Black and underrepresented minorities navigate the special education process. We want to help raise awareness in the Black and Brown community, remove the stigma about learning disabilities, and provide you access to professionals in the space of dyslexia and special education that you need to hear from.
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by the Lab School of Washington, D.C. At the Lab School, they understand that every child learns differently. That's why they are dedicated to providing personalized education for students with learning differences, including dyslexia. With specialized programs tailored to individual needs, their experienced educators empower students to unlock their full potential and thrive academically, socially, and beyond. Discover a nurturing environment where every child is celebrated for their unique strengths. To learn more about Lab School, go to labschool.org. That's labschool.org.
Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast. I'm your host, Winifred A. Winston.
And I'm LaDerek Horn.
And today we have with us Andre Skeppel. He is a serial entrepreneur. I'm going to say that in there, an innovator. And he is joining us from the UK.
Hey, brother Andre.
Thank you so much for joining us. Andre, if you could just tell us, I know I've heard it before, but we just want to jump in with you telling us your story and your journey. And I definitely want to talk about the work you're doing with Full Spectrum.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, it's an absolute pleasure to be here talking to you and other people today. Winifred, Derek, thank you so much. I will give you the abridged version of my story. So, dyspraxic, dyslexic. I was only diagnosed with those conditions when I was 22 in my second year of university education. I studied a bachelor's degree in human biology. Now, the story goes like this. As a child, overachiever, did very well in what we call primary school, you guys would call, elementary school and in kindergarten. Was always an overachiever. Going into high school, again, did very well in my grades, and I was predicted to go and study medicine at Ivy League university. I had a whole lot of high hopes from the way that I was very studious and very diligent in my approach to education. Then I entered into college, and it all went downhill. Now, why did that happen? My speculation is that from age 5 to 16, I was in a supplementary school on Saturdays for children from Black and African backgrounds. And because I was in an environment that was very immersive to not just to fulfill the way that I learned, but being in a school environment where my teachers were Black, my peers were Black, the admin, everyone was from our community. And so I felt that because that environment was very immersive, it did actually mask the underlying neurodivergence that hadn't been detected until things got really bad in terms of I was failing my exams, my studies. The prospects of me going to study medicine were looking very bleak. Now, I did hustle hard to get into university, but when I got into university and I elected to get an assessment done because I wanted to understand why am I doing so bad in my exams despite me working so hard, it made sense from a diagnosis of dyslexia and dyspraxia. So eventually I did get my degree. I also was then invited to go and partake in a master's degree. So I didn't do a taught master's, I did a master's by research and dissertation. So it's kind of like a mini PhD. And for my master's, I developed a diagnostic platform that can detect bacteria, so methicillin-resistant Staph aureus or MRSA. I was able to detect it in 25 minutes, as opposed to 8 hours or 2 days using traditional laboratory techniques. And so going from my master's and having that first experience in doing real scientific research, laboratory-based, it gave me the first interaction to innovating. I was always a young person that was always interested in building things. And I wasn't satisfied with what I had, where I was in. I was glad to create my own. And so having that thirst, that hunger, that desire to build things that have impacts was really fulfilled during my master's. Following my master's, I spent about a decade working within the biotech industry. So started off as being, doing a science-based master's in the laboratory, then worked in business development, consulting, working with big pharmaceutical companies, with the top research institutions in the world, universities, diagnostic companies. And my expertise was in diagnostics, working with scientists to build devices that can identify a disease or can track and monitor and measure how certain elements of our body can be detailed into what we like to call personalized medicine. The ability to understand something from an individual and from the needs for an individual to then tailor the right type of therapeutic intervention. Now, that is when I got the real idea for full spectrum. And I said to myself, what if you was to build a platform that not only had the ability to identify particular instances in individual, what I like to call recognition elements that pertain to how we learn, how we grow, how we thrive, all these things there, and applied it into software that could detail and understand and map all those markers that pertain to what makes us unique, and then give the insights and give the instructions or the interventions that can actually help with those particular issues that we come across. This is something that could be particularly explosive. And it's actually an idea that really manifested when I did my master's, because when I was presenting my thesis, the idea that I had was this, the diagnostic device was actually designed for sub-Saharan Africa and also for those in the developing world that, for those who weren't privileged to have a local hospital or healthcare center and have to travel miles, long distances to get the support they need. I said, you know what? There needs to be a platform, a solution that can identify what the issue is from a person. And then without with little human intervention, that information can go to somewhere else in the world and they can determine the needs of the individual therapeutically and send that intervention. So I said it should be a payload of medication, send it to the person in the middle of the forest or in a village or anything like that. And there you go. So the end part of the story goes like this. When I had this idea, I thought, I've got to do something with it. Perpendicular to at the time, I was getting fed up of being typecasted into sales and business development roles. And I said to myself, I'm an innovator. I like to build stuff. I like to create things. I want to make change, not just to myself, my family, or my immediate environment. I want to make global change. So if I'm not going to get these opportunities working in corporate life, then I'm going to start my own thing and really build it. And then the trigger, that one bit that said, you know what, Andre, do it, was when I became a father. And literally, as my son was being born, that was pretty much the spark to say, you know what, I'm going to build something for my son, not just so that my son one day can take over my company, but also I'm going to build something that ensures that he and his peers will not be failed by a flawed education system. And so that was when Full Spectrum was truly born. And what we're now building is a what we call an agentic AI platform that is designed to personalize, individualize, completely transform the education, health, and social care for neurodivergent people of all ages. So it's continuously suited to fulfill the needs of those that are left behind.
Oh man, Andre, that is amazing. I want to back up to when you started in college. What problems were you having to make it? And I love when you said that you believe it was that immersive environment, because I feel like we teach us differently. right? And we teach us differently and we don't have these preconceived notions, especially when it's an environment that it sounds like was just black on black on black on black, right? Let's keep it real, right? it was just for us, by us, it sounds like, right?
Absolutely.
So then when you started at the university, what problems? Because you knew you were smart, right? There was, you didn't have this thing where, oh, I don't think I'm smart, I've been struggling, but you had not been struggling. But as soon as you made that transition to the university, you started to struggle and immediately said, let me get an assessment. How did you even know, you know, to do that?
You know, it's funny. There was one part of my story that I strategically omitted for the purpose of this question that you asked. So I started walking, talking late. I started walking, talking from age of two. And this was like late 80s. Now, at the time, conditions such as dyspraxia and dyslexia were not as well known and trending topics as they are now. In fact, I read a medical report about a year or so ago, and it said that, and this is from the National Health Service, it said Andre has clumsy child syndrome. Right. So
that was a diagnosis,
clumsy child syndrome. So when I started developing rapidly, they're like, oh, this is strange. Let's give Andre an IQ test. IQ test performed was 4, IQ of 120. So we always knew that I was above intelligence, but I had a developmental concern. Now, into college and university education, essentially what happened was that when I was having issues reading, when I was a child, I used to love reading books, and then I stopped reading books and I found it very difficult to sit down and concentrate and study. And I found that my eyes were being very sensitive. And the only way that I could actually really focus on reading printed text was wearing these blue spectacles that I had. They had a blue lenses on them. And I went to get my eyes tested from an optometrist. And the optometrist was like, why are you wearing those sunglasses? And I was like, well, I wear them because it helps me to read. It helps me to focus on the words. And rather than the words jump around and I can't really concentrate on them, and therefore I have to read a page so many times in order to get the information inside there. And therefore it would make the whole process of studying, revision, you know, the whole antiquated notion of you can only do well in academia if you retain information in your head, not about the ability to solve problems and ability to apply the information in various different settings. And I said, you know, I'm dyslexic. So when I had that insight from the optometrist, when I applied for university education, I put in my application form, I may have a learning disability. They took it important. They funded me to go and see an educational psychologist, got my assessment performed, and the educational psychologist was like, yep, you are partially dyslexic and you're severely dyspraxic. In fact, I know if I could look underneath the soles of your shoes, there's only one side of your shoes that's more worn down than the other because of your coordination. It took about 75 minutes. The assessment made sense. And it was like, oh my gosh, this makes absolute sense. You know, it makes sense as to why I find it difficult to sit and read and I'm struggling to adapt or conform to regular methods of study. But then when it came to essays, when it came to dissertations, doing thesis, doing practical work, I would always be the highest. In fact, the only reason why I got my undergrad degree, because I failed in so many of my exams, was my dissertation was so good, despite me not finishing it, typical, you know, neurodivergence, ADHD and all that, but I submitted a dissertation that was unfinished and it was such a high quality. The only reason why I didn't get a first, because it was unfinished. And they said that. So that made a whole lot of sense as to what my learning attributes were. My learning attributes were not passive. We're not, here's information, you receive it, you store it, you regurgitate it. My learning attributes were more kinesthetic, activity, you know, being experimental, being all those things there, being very tactile. So multisensory. And so this is where, from that diagnosis and from that enlightenment, I started to research into the concepts of neurodiversity, because it became a thing. And I started to advocate with my peers around me to say, you should get yourself assessed. You should get yourself tested. If you're struggling doing all these typical elements of mundane study and everything else like that, it's not because you don't want to do it. It might be because this is not the style. In fact, the curriculum needs to be evolved. The curriculum needs to be completely changed because we live in the 21st century. What on earth do we have, especially in the UK, where our national curriculum originated in the Victorian age during the 1800s and became packaged as the national curriculum in the 1960s, and there's been no iterations. Yet we have a curriculum that was designed for manufacturing jobs. Where are the manufacturing jobs in the United Kingdom? They're all outsourced. We're a service-based country. So it doesn't make sense. So this is why I said to myself, the system has to change. I would love to change the system from being in the grassroots, but the way to make monumental change, global change, is design a solution that can globally scale. Hence why I mentioned tech.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Andre, can you talk to us a little bit about dyspraxia? A lot of folks don't, we don't hear that term often. And sometimes
I don't know if it's come up during the podcast yet. So that was a place I was going to go as well.
Can
you explain so dyspraxia?
Dyspraxia is formally known as developmental coordination disorder, or DCD. Now, what dyspraxia or DCD is in the scientific element, it's an immature motor neuron development. So in our nervous system, you've got axons and neurons, you've got two types of neurons. You've got motor neurons and you've got sensory neurons. So ability to receive information that our central nervous system brain processes and provides either information is stored or a reaction output. Now, when it comes to the motor neurons, you've got fine motor skills and gross motor skills. Now, if motor neurons are underdeveloped, then effectively it means a very typical involuntary reaction. So for example, you throw me a ball, I will struggle to catch it. I'll have to concentrate so hard. I have to think of the trajectory of the ball that's been thrown, the direction, the speed and velocity, and then how I need to then position my hand to receive it, and then where I need to be positioned and the body shape and all these things there. And if I don't think of all these things in a very sequential way, the likelihood is I will catch it. Whereas a neurotypical person or someone who doesn't have DCD, they can just catch it because they have that coordination. Now, that is the difficulty in terms of coordination, in terms of heightened sensitivity to sound, you know, not walking in straight lines. Also, working memory can be at times impaired. So, you know, if you think of my story in terms of I find it difficult to revise and get information in my head and regurgitate an exam, well, of course, if my working memory is not designed to store things to regurgitate, but it's more based on multisensory, you know, long-term storage, then it's fine. Now, when I talk about conditions like DCD or any type of neurodivergence, I always like to talk about the downsides in terms of the limitations, but then focus on the superpowers. So with DCD, the superpowers that are unlocked are this. Now, I gave you the example of you throwing me the ball and thinking of all those sequential processes that I'd have to concentrate my mind to do. Now, that's the equivalent of rather than go from A to B as a straight line, the mind goes from A to C to D to F to J to M and all that, and eventually get there. Now, the same concept comes to neuronic communication. Now, if I don't have the ability to go, right, catch it, think of all these things, just imagine now what the brain is able to do to process large sets of data, what it can do to solve problems, what it can do to think from different perspectives, analysis, creativity, innovation, all those things there. The mind has evolved to adapt to common practices of coordination by adding additional processing capabilities and also additional neurons. There's a phenomenon in neuroscience called neuroplasticity, where you can actually, you know, change this, how your nervous system adapts and things like that, and also neurogenesis, how you can create new neurons based on the adaptation of a particular activity or environment. So we have adapted to our reduced ability to be, you know, coordinated, to be, you know, for example, I can't play tennis. I am absolutely rubbish at tennis because hence why, you know, any racket sports or anything with a bat and a ball or anything like that, or generally in most parts of athletics, anything that deals with some sort of coordination, not the best. When it comes to, you know, I used to do martial arts, I was great at it. Anything tactile, wrestling, boxing, all those things there, absolutely great because it's how the body is adapted to perform certain functions. But then the payload of it is when it comes to problem solving analysis, second to none.
Wow. Can we I'm really interested in full spectrum, and you laid out this entrepreneurial journey from sounds like healthcare delivery in
Yes.
remote areas to now looking at this agentic AI platform. So I'm going to say this at the risk of dating the episode because I don't know when people are gonna listen to it, but ChatGPT 4.0 just launched, and I was listening to some of the demos this morning where, there's the translation demo where there's a woman talking in Italian and it's translating directly into English. Zero
Yes.
pause, zero hesitation, all the personality of having a translator there with you. And then I saw another, or I was listening to another example, and it was the founder of Khan Academy sitting with his son, and ChatGPT is honest to God acting as a math tutor, right? Like, with personality, and the father sets up the parameters of don't give him the answer, just help him to get it, right? And yeah, and so I know for me as a dyslexic, technology has been the great multiplier in my abilities, right? Yeah, and I'm old enough to remember the very early versions of Kurzweil, right? And to see that application, early, and I'm assuming like all C++ driven AI stuff, from way back in the day to now it just being something I can walk around with on my phone and get the speech to text recognition. What is your AI platform doing in our schools? Because I know, like, when I was a kid, it was all this focus on like handwriting, right? And now I don't handwrite much of anything because everything is type and everything else, right? So I know, like, as technology evolves, it's going to like open up all these spaces and abilities for those of us who struggle with learning. But can you just maybe give us a little bit more of an insight into like what your platform does and how it supports folks with minds like ours?
Absolutely, bro. So let me scale it down in terms of where we are and what we've developed as the core technology. So the core technology was always designed to personalize the curriculum. Now, our approach to personalized curriculum is not based on here's a bit of content, the way you interact with it, we will keep on differentiating the content based on interaction. That's very just kind of one directional. Our approach was always, well, we don't want to take a snapshot of the child's needs and then basically fix the curriculum based on a single fixed perspective as a sort of ubiquitous element to support. What I've always said, especially from my background working within the healthcare system and working within, personalized healthcare, I've always seen it as the needs of an individual are never static, they're dynamic. It always evolves over time. Now, if you take a child that is neurodivergent, but they may be affluent, you stick them into, an independent school, a fee-paying school that's got the best tutors, the smallest classes, essentially tuition of that type of immersive element, of course the teacher is going to be able to constantly adapt the delivery of pedagogy to the child because it's in an intimate setting. And therefore, the delivery can always be of the highest quality because there's limited interventions to go around, right? So it's about quantity and quality, the reducing quality, quantity, higher quality. Now, that's not the case for the majority of children that are in the state school system, that are in, schools that are funded by the state and so on and so forth. And particularly within our communities, in black and brown communities, we don't have access to private tuition to that degree where, we're not as affluent. So our technology is designed to take multiple perspectives of the learner. So you need to understand the perspectives of identifying their needs. So, okay, we will have a technology that identifies if a child has dyslexia or has autism or ADHD or dyspraxia, any type of learning difference, it'll identify it. Then once it's identified, it creates a profile. That profile begins scaffolding different elements of knowledge based on the child on multiple perspectives. So it's not just, okay, here's an application that's going to identify dyslexia from the child's direct input. It identifies it from the child's input, identifies it from the input of observations from the parent, from the teacher, from the healthcare worker, from the social worker, from the psychologist, from any person that's actually working around the child. All those perspectives are collected and aggregated to form a single point of truth. Once you have that single point of truth, you then constantly review, track, and monitor it. So you've got now a bot that identifies the need, a bot that creates the database, a bot that surveys and tracks and monitors the database, a bot that creates the content and the interventions based off the information that's required, a bot that reviews the content, the interventions, the strategies, the input to see whether if it's still relative to the child's needs, a bot that then requires and brings in all additional personnel that may have to fill additional gaps if it's being missed over and over and over. So what you now have is multiple bots. I've probably listed about 5 or 6 different bots, and maybe there could be other bots to help those bots, and so on and so forth. Now, what I've just described is agentic AI. Agentic AI is not one agent, but multiple agents that all have dedicated functions that are structured in a hierarchical way to solve complex situations as a collective. Bots talking to other bots, bots working with other bots. And in our platform, that's what we have. But also what we can do is have bots to create other bots.
Mm.
And that's what we discovered. This is where we can talk to AI and say, I would like to create another assistant that does this. I'll give an example. On Friday, I was playing around with our platform and I got my assistant. I call my AI assistant Jacob. So Jacob, can you please design a session prompt for a new assistant that can identify dyslexia in written text for a 14-year-old. And then it starts to design and code itself. Once it codes itself, you have another bot that's now dedicated for that. So now what we have, the technology, the core technology, is literally continuously identifying, surveying, changing, curation, collaborating over and over and over again. And then the best part is all the information that is actually acquiring from this ensemble of people around the child, around the learner, all the information we don't own. It's on the blockchain. So all that personal information that is fed into it, one of the biggest concerns that people have about systems like ChatGPT or Gemini or Llama is because that these generative AIs are available on the open web. Now, if you actually train or work with a ChatGPT model, that information, you can't control where it goes. But on our system, we've leveraged those existing models like ChatGPT and others onto our own platform, which is blockchain based. And we've basically localized it on a blockchain. And so now when a user, so if you say for yourself or your children, is applying, adding a school report, or is doing a test, an assessment, or it's taking on whatever information that is unique and personalized to you, that information stays on a blockchain. That information is owned by you. And therefore, you have total dominion and sovereignty over how your data is accessed, manipulated, and transferred. And the other part is that data, if it's going from one bot to another bot or one database to another database, because it's a blockchain, all those transactions, all those communications between one database to another or one bot to another is all translated onto an open ledger that can't be tampered. So when it comes to regulators having to check and see whether if a gender result could be questioned and scrutinized, in the current education system, it's lost. This is why so many children get lost through that, especially when it comes to social care. But with our system, you'll find it because everything is recorded and logged. And therefore you have that data provenance in addition to your data sovereignty, as in owning your own data and using and benefit from it. So that's our platform in a nutshell. It's an agentic multi-AI solution embedded into our own Web3 blockchain environment that is scalable and reproducible across any region of the world.
And Andre, so it's really, it sounds like it's a tool for our schools, right? Like it's sort of having almost a specialist or a series of specialists on demand that a school staff would be able to utilize, kind of like what you were doing with the bringing a specialist into, rural parts of the world, now, you know, even if you don't have the economic resources to hire, you know, staff or what have you, or if your existing staff don't have a specialized background in learning supports, you now have a platform that you can turn to be able to bounce ideas or come up with solutions to be able to help a particular child. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's that and more. So what you've explained in terms of a school with our platform, with our technology, once it's matured, there is little need to hire high priced specialized staff to support a condition.
Okay. I want to just jump in because I'm listening to that ChatGPT example this morning of that tutor. And I think they were doing the Pythagorean theorem. And I immediately, and I was thinking, because I knew we were going to talk to you. So I was like, this made me think about the chasm between all of our families. And regardless of race, there are just a lot of families who are looking for the Orton Gillingham coach, the Wilson trained person, right? Like, and to find them is one thing, because sometimes you're not geographically close to them. There's the logistics of, you know, okay, if I get to you, the time, the place, there's the money and everything else. And I was watching this or listening to this example, and I said, this isn't too far away from having some of these very specialized literacy programs that are, again, there are access issues, as well as sometimes we're dealing with issues, let's be real, around cultural bias and how that can interfere within the instruction. It felt like we were just one or two iterations away from, I mean, and now it's like, okay, that's what you're making, right?
In addition, even the IEPs that are developed here in the States for kiddos with learning differences. The IEPs, the individual education plans, we know that staff aren't trained in how to teach reading, right? So how are you developing the individual education plan for a kiddo who's dyslexic, right? For a kiddo who has these learning differences, if you don't even know how. So I'm thinking like the schools could use this tool to develop and create more robust IEP plans. I'm thinking about accommodations in the workplace.
Well, I'm so glad, Winifred, that you touched on that, because this is where life's pretty exciting for us right now, because we've actually built this prototype that is now self-writing IEPs. We've basically got a prototype
that eliminates that's a big whole deal. Reporting.
The no need for reporting. It's all about, for example, you talk to an AI, you say, right, for example, when we do our demonstrations, we say, right, here's a theoretical child, Ethan Harris. He's 8 years old. He's got autism and dyslexia. He likes this. He likes da-da-da-da-da. Here's all his information from his previous records. Can you now build a profile from it? So now what we have, it takes some information, understands it, and says, oh, we're missing these reports. Can you provide these reports, please? Yes, here you go. Retrieves it. Great. Now, has anything changed with Ethan? So we will say, okay, Ethan's had a new baby sister, or grandmother's passed away, or they've moved house. Every little element, just from a conversation, it's understanding and it's given out suggestions as to why there could be changes to his IEP, to say this is what needs to change, and it's the difference between what the previous IEP has and what the new one should be, and say, would you like to draft the new version? Yes, it writes a report. But even better, not only does it write the report, and it actually aggregates all the information from all the technical information from clinical staff and from psychologists as well as the teachers. Now, say, for example, and you've probably experienced this yourself, you may have received a report from your local physician or from your psychologist, and they're using very technical terms that have a lot of jargon, and it goes over your head, and you can't really engage because the language, the linguistics are beyond your point of recognition. So now, imagine this, let me blow your minds. Our AI can now translate that dialogue, that report, into the linguistics, into the cadence, into the format that is preferred by you. So now this is where the agentic element comes play, and that starts to blow away everything else. So imagine now your application, your portal is managed by your personal AI, like Jarvis with Iron Man, Tony Stark. That is your personal AI. It understands how you learn, what you like, what you dislike, all your preferences, your entire medical and education history. It's all stored there ready. Now, this report comes from your local health center. It's delivered to you. It's not delivered to you as a document. It's not even as an email or a dashboard. It's just code. It goes to that AI, it receives it and says, but Derek, we receive this information and it's giving you all this information in the format how you understand it. Or if it's a person that speaks another language, translate it to that language, so on and so forth. So this is where, and this is why I was so keen to have this conversation with you guys, because the type of technology that we have, it will evolve to replace websites and applications. There is the time coming where what we have is the ability to create software without learning how to code, by just talking to AI, but actually having anyone work with an assistant and basically generate a new bit of content or a new concept just based on the interactions in natural language. We are working on AI that can actually generate an entire user interface based on your conversation. So rather than have an app that looks nice and shiny or not so great, if you want to look at a report in a particular way, it will create the graphics or create the output as you want it based on your preferences
and
full accessibility.
And Andre, are you able to adjust? So I hear the translation as far as languages, but what about dialect? You know, that's one of the issues that, you know, Black folks have, all the variations in our dialect and how that can interfere with communication, particularly when it comes to our institutions, healthcare, schools.
Well, if the model's not there, we'll train it. So okay. The key thing now is that so when you are working with AI, you have to declare the intent and the parameters. And you can say, I want you to talk in the fashion of a 19-year-old Afro-American from Baltimore, Maryland, who may talk with a particular slang. And it'll do it if it's got the models. And if it doesn't have the models, what we're training the bots to do is to learn from its user. So as the user is interacting from daily life, and it's like, I notice how you speak. This is your profile. So now, and this is again, the agentic and the retrieval elements of agentic AI comes to play. So now if an AI is sitting there and you've requested it to, you know, perform an output with this type of linguistic fashion, and the AI says, I don't know. I don't have the information. I tell you what, let me speak to my team of AIs and see if there's another AI that may have that information. And so it'll do a search and find a bot that is registered to that same user in Baltimore and say, can I borrow the model of your linguistics to use for my user? Here you go, done. So now the AI is working with other AIs from other users. So every user becomes a collaborator to the overall intelligence of the platform.
Can I ask another question? So I'm interested in the inputs, right? So like, let me see, you said you weren't diagnosed until you were like 22 years old, right?
Yes.
And we just did an interview with the brother who was, he had to be in his 20s too, right? When he was diagnosed. So do we need to have like reporting, like a teacher or educator, or someone entering information directly or interacting directly on the platform? Is it like, can I take a bunch of photos of tests this person took and drawings they made over the course of their life, and that's used as information? Like, how's that input happening? You know, and like someone at 22 years old, 40 years old, is this still going to work for them, or is it more tailored for younger folks?
Fantastic question. It's age agnostic. So it doesn't matter which age you are. It could be young or old. It's designed to work in different elements. Now, what we have as a prototype is the information we feed to this early prototype is all text format. So what we do is that we take in documents, it could be a PDF or a text document or whatever, and we feed it, it retrieves it, and it registers that information. Now, what we're gonna build on is the ability for users to take pictures of their existing reports, and then also to build it. So the way the system works is the first cohort of users will have to feed their own information to it. If they've got the information stored electronically, great. If it's physical, then it needs to become digitized. If their information can be retrieved from a local health center or from their school or from the university or anything like that, then as long as the platform has access permissions to retrieve the information from those other databases, it will retrieve it and use it as its canonical data source. But as it grows and as it becomes much more sophisticated, it will literally be intelligent enough to say, right, talk to it. It will sit and it will monitor what you're doing, understand the interest from your internet, your web activity, from conversations you have in school, even like think of an AI in a classroom, giving it permission to, you know, observe the interactions between the child and the teacher, and it's building its knowledge off the back of it. And it's literally just growing its scaffold and its own cognition. But the key thing is, because we have to train the data sets are there to build the cognition of the system. Once it's got enough information, then all it has to do is say, if this user has a very similar profile to the other profiles that we've banked and verified, then we can tend to speculate that, okay, they have this condition, they have these needs, these are the interventions that can work with them, these are the settings and so forth. And it will only change it if it detects that there's a difference in the environment. So it becomes much more intuitive and much more responsive based on the mass of users. That's why we had to build it in this way, so it becomes smarter the more people use it.
This is a game changer, not only for education, but in the workplace, when companies have these set job descriptions, right? So that piece of it is already stable, right? Because this is what we need you to be able to do. And now we're going to look at the individual, right? This neurodivergent person, what they bring and what supports do they need to do this particular job?
Absolutely.
Like that's going to be a game changer for...
We're working on it. We've already got plans. We've already been approached to actually build a platform for corporate recruitment. And the designs that I've got effectively include... So remember I mentioned how every single user owns their data on a blockchain? So mm-hmm. that whole entire database is decentralized to their ownership. Now imagine all the information. Imagine AI is picking up all this information from as young as 5 throughout 20 years of their academia, going from kindergarten, pre-K, kindergarten, elementary school, high school, college. It's taking all the information and all those experiences, and all that information that it's stored and it's creating, it could be represented like as a digital asset, like an NFT, a passport, a digital passport. So now imagine now that person, that same young person, has now graduated from college and going to a new job. Rather than put together a resume, rather than do an application form, it could be that job has the other side of our platform and say, find me candidates that fit this profile, that have this level of resilience, that have this level, this psychological requirement that not only fits the role now, but also there's an algorithm that shows how much their potential is. This is the same type of data information that's used in elite sports to calculate right. what efficiency of the outcome for your team. The same technology can apply to something like this, but it's your information, like your passport, that is now accessing that and saying, here's a job for you, no application form, no resume, you're the right fit, we're drafting you in. The same mechanism. We are
this is the Myers-Briggs, this is the you know the personality test, and you know there are plenty of organizations that do these sort of assessments because they're interested in a diverse workforce that can, you know, cognitively complement each other to solve problems. And you know, and there are entire divisions of Fortune 100 companies that are built out recruiting people with ADHD, with autism, because there are certain tasks that having that neural makeup makes you like highly prized as an employee.
Absolutely.
And what's so exciting about this to me, and for me personally, and don't come for me in the comments, but the promise of blockchain for me is not cryptocurrency, but it's the ability to share information, documents, you know, buy a house and it not take days, right? Yeah. And
smart contracts, having a piece of property that has to go through the whole long legalities of ownership, it's there and it just makes sense. I think the key thing, what we're trying to unlock with the combination of AI and blockchain, is to say that, look, once the information's there, and when you own the information, that information follows you wherever you go. Now, what we as a company have been dying to achieve with this convergence of two technological disciplines is true inclusion, as the ability to apply for a university application, position, mm-hmm. a vacancy, job role, to even, you know, who knows, even for voting, without the need of bias of the name, about where you're from, about what the superficial elements that put us in categories. When you actually build AI, and I will say this right now, to have an AI company that's owned by a person of color that's actually taking their experiences and training data sets to be as inclusive as possible, because you are using your experiences and applying it to the way that it's engineered, what we have now is the ability to then say all barriers are broken. In fact, you know what? There's no such thing being neurotypical. Everybody's neurodivergent. Because now we have an entire spectrum of information that has been identified, mapped, scaffolded, and communicated, not with people, but with other machines that will know us as well as anything else and can communicate in a fraction of a second. So that true inclusion between different disciplines, between different sectors, and different peoples of all walks of life, that's what we're trying to achieve with this technology. And that's why the company is called Full Spectrum.
Wow. Andre, I know our audience is listening, and they're going to be two questions. So, and I'm just going to hit them back to back, and you respond. So, the first one is: are you like, and forgive me for not knowing this, but are you like in the market already? Are there schools and employers taking advantage of this? And, you know, like, is it in the market already? And then the second one is: you're in the UK, we're in the US. I know our audience is all over, but like, what markets are you operating in now?
There's a very, very important question. So we have just created our first prototype, and now we're building our next phase of our prototypes. So for us to build the prototypes, the solution's not on the market, but the service to co-develop is. So as a call to action for any school districts, for any local government authorities, for any health centers, any large organization that wants to introduce the next level of new inclusion within your facility, what I like to call hyper-personalization, you can work with us and we can configure and co-develop this prototype to be a fully working platform over the span of months or a couple of years, and then we can deploy it. Because our whole route to market isn't let's build and let's deploy and, you know, we can make mistakes. No, we want to be very careful and be very prudent. We want to say, look, let's work with the right organizations who want to achieve this, and say there's not one way of building this platform. We need to build it with people, with those organizations that have their individual needs, pain points, and complexities to achieve a solution. And so we are in the market to collaborate. We're in the market to collaborate, and we are planning for this platform to be commercially available by July 2027, so in 3 years' time. Not only will it be available across the UK, it'll be available worldwide. And that collaboration doesn't limit to the UK. Anywhere across the world, particularly across the pond, and you guys in the US, let's have a conversation.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm just like, I'm in awe, and I'm listening, and I'm like, oh my gosh. I just, I see the potential. I understand it. You know, we just, as LaDerek said earlier, we just finished interviewing someone who was a former professional football player. Right. And I'm thinking of just what it can do, how it's eliminating all these steps and all the limited access to certain experts. Right. And just laying out how you work with this individual. It's making it so individualized.
Absolutely.
Like I just
in a new market. Going back to my experience in a Black community Saturday school, and the first experience I had of personalized education was you had people from community come from different professions and say, you know what, I speak French, I'm going to teach French. I'm a software engineer, I'm going to teach computer science. I'm a geologist, I'm going to teach geology. You had so many people that had their own professions that came in and said, look, the curriculum, there's the only core part of the curriculum was English, maths, and African history. Everything else was built on top of it based on the individual interests of each child. Now, I said to myself, now, I want to now build a new curriculum where you don't have to be a qualified teacher to teach a particular profession. You don't have to be a qualified lecturer to lecture in a university. We should create a new gig economy that says, you know what, if you've got a particular skill, need profession, expertise, create your content, train your bot, upload it to our platform. Not only will our platform will then take that content and educate someone in that particular area of interest or career, but from the blockchain and smart contracts, they can get paid in doing it. So the more you feed into the system, the more you get paid. Anyone out there that coaches and tutors and can't scale their offering, you come work with us, get some passive revenue. That's what we want to build. We want to build a completely decentralized and personalized curriculum that has no barriers.
Yeah, and I would say like 3 years ago, this would have sounded like science fiction, right? But I'm saying this to our audience, like, again, this might sound like far-fetched, but if you're not really following what's going on with AI, the, you know, blockchain, these sort of technologies, like the future is here right now. And I want to pivot, if you don't mind, Andre, if we can a little. So, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I have a real estate business. I do speaking and consulting, and I still, my dyslexia, my executive functioning issues, they still show up all the time, right? Yeah. My inbox is never on zero, right? I'm always sending that apology email, you know, I'll have it to you tomorrow, that kind of thing. I'm just wondering, brother, because correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like this aspect of your work or your company, it was almost like a love letter to your child, right? You got this child who's going into the education system. And so it's like, yo, I want to show up for you now, right? And create these tools. But like, for you as an entrepreneur, is there anything now that you just like, yo, I wish I had this, like this would make my life so much easier?
You know what? To be honest with you, it's how the AI boom has, for those who know me, they know that I've always embraced technology ever since I was a child. I've always, one of my nicknames was the Wizard of All Technology. Because I used to love technology. I used to not just love technology, but I knew how to apply it to make me as productive as possible. So now apply it to now and say, look, the way generative AI, I mean, look, the other day I was talking to a financial specialist. They specialize in M&A, and we're talking to him for investment. And she was like, she's got a client that wants her to look for a number of hospitals to buy. They want to acquire a whole bunch of hospitals, but they don't know where to start. I was like, well, I can help you. I'm not going to charge you. I tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to compile a whole list of all the hospitals across the UK in order of revenue, in order of size and location, and I'm going to get it to you in 15 minutes. How do I do it? I went to GPT-4o, and I gave it the prompts, and I got my own bots to work with it, and it compiled the list. So the fact that being neurodivergent now, where we are required to read and to, you know, have you ever had the situation where, you know, like probably as you've seen, over talking, or your emails or your text is not as succinct and it's trying to get pinpoint. Right. So now it's a case of, whereas I've always been penalized because of my neurodivergence, it's to say, well, have an AI to say, you know how I like to talk, you know how I should be talking, can you summarize this to me? Can you create this document for me? Can you draft this email for me? Can you whatever? And it can do it. And then it means there's less time for all the BS and doing all the admin and everything else, and more time for thinking.
Oh my God. Yeah. Bro, like, oh my God. Okay. Cause like, you know, I'm writing the email and it's like the 2-page explanation. And then I go to my wife and it's like, she's like, bro, you just need to write 2 sentences. Like, you don't need to use all these words to get right to the point.
It's great. I think and I'd like to give a massive shout out to my mentor and chairman, who he's the reason why I've got all this AI knowledge, because he's been doing AI since 1989, and he's been in the bedrock of technology for ages. He was even the original developer of Grand Theft Auto, and he's my chairman. He's the one that's building our platform. That's why we are so advanced, because access to people like him. And one of the things that he taught me was never be afraid to tell people that, you know, I'm not dusting around, I'm not wasting time, I'm not procrastinating, I'm thinking.
Yeah,
you may be
right.
Fishing, you may be doing something that you enjoy doing, and it may seem you're not being productive, you may just, you know, be idle. I'm not being idle, I'm thinking. The reason why I'm thinking is because I've got other things going on. I can do whatever you thought it may take a week to do or hours to do, it's taken an instant. And now I can spend my time thinking about the next thing I'm going to create. So I think this is the key thing. And that's the message that I love to give to entrepreneurs like ourselves, in terms of there's never one way of doing things. You have so many people out there that have MBAs and have PhDs and have a whole bunch of accreditations from institutions that dictate how to do certain things. We're now in a precipice of fundamental change globally, where you don't have to do what the status quo tell you to do. If you're entrepreneur enough, you can create your own solutions to solve those problems. In fact, the whole definition of entrepreneurship is not about being a business person making money. It's about solving problems. Right. So my key thing is, if you want to be that elite problem solver, or what I like to call an advanced thinker, embrace all the tools and resources and the people around you to actually put you in the zone of comfort, which is your brain. And for those who are dyslexic and dyspraxic or any type of neurodivergence, and say, you can't do this. If your brain is the most powerful thing you've got, then use that to your abundance, and that will get you far. That's what I'm doing at the moment. So, you know, the technology is out there, and it doesn't cost anything. Our platform that we built, our MVP, our prototype, we spent zero money, because the technology is out there. $6-7 billion of research is out there for us to use and to harness in our will. Learn how to use it and be a bit
better. I'm reading the book now, Slow Productivity by Carl Newport. I don't know if you've seen any of his work, but he is very much embracing the idea of, you know, creating a world, particularly for knowledge workers, you know, where like we can't judge ourselves, like you were saying, upon like the standards of the Industrial Revolution. It's not always like I sit at the desk and then the more time I spend here, the more, you know, X kind of comes out of my keyboard or what have you, right? Like there are times where, and I think it's part of the gift of neurodiversity, we do have to at times allow our minds to wander and that word salad to come out and, you know, and all of that sort of development to happen. And consistently, we tend to be the ones that actually make the breakthroughs because of that different way to approaching problem solving.
And I think this is where, especially for those who run their own business or any corporate executives, you must, it's highly, highly recommended to embrace neurodiversity, because effectively what you'll find is when you have a whole workforce of people that think in different paradigms, then you're able to provide different perspectives of value to your innovation, but add another layer on top, and the intersections of background, whether your personal color or particular gender or anything like that, those additional intersections are really going to unlock true innovation, because it's all about how do you converge that coherence of different perspectives to have a necessary innovative output?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, this has been amazing. I knew when I spoke with you, during the pandemic, I told Derek, I was like, you gotta hear him. You gotta listen to him, because this stuff is amazing.
His brother's smart. She was like, this brother's smart.
I'm like, you gotta hear this. And then when I started researching at Full Spectrum, I was like, wait a minute, this is a different level. This is different than what we talked about, you know, during the pandemic. So I just can't thank you enough for coming through and sharing all this great information. And really, I'm just excited about simplifying the process, how quickly you can get the information to help folks, especially neurodivergent folks, really tap into their potential, right? We're talking education, we're talking in the workplace, and it's going to be a game changer. Like, it's just really, like you said, who said it? You, Ola Derek, just said we're in the future now, right? Like, this is going to be a game changer. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all this great information.
So
it's my great pleasure.
So Andre, you gave us a call to action, and I just want you to restate it again to, you know, folks out here in the U.S. or whoever may be listening. What's the call to action to support the work you're doing? And then what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
The call to action is, come work with me. Come work with us. We now have the power to harness technology to change the world, to change the lives of those left behind. So you can contact us. So our website is www.fullspectrum. So that's fullspectrum.co.uk. And you can contact me via email. So andre@fullspectrum.co.uk. You can also find us on Instagram, Full Spectrum LTD, or you can find me at Skeps on Instagram, on X, and also you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I'm pretty omnipresent online, so I always get notifications. I have an Apple Watch that pings all the times of night, and I welcome all interactions, because we are here to share. We are here to share what we have developed, what we've researched, and most importantly, we're here to work together to have the ultimate solution to unlock our true potential.
Brother Andre, as we get ready to conclude, do you have one piece of advice to the young people who are listening to us now?
Absolutely. The piece of advice for young people out there, and those that listen to my story and listen to this conversation, No one can tell you no. If you have true belief in yourself and humility to level up and to always be the best version of yourself, the key thing is this: always have the right people around you that can elevate you. I have a saying I say to my son, I say to my staff, and I say to anyone else: if you want the best from me, I'll need the best around me. So ensure that you always squad up with the people that are there to elevate you. And most importantly, you are part of the squads to elevate them. That's my message to you guys.
Thank you. Thank you. That is wonderful. Well, there you have it, you guys. Today we had a great conversation with Andre. And for me, he just took it to another level, merging AI with neurodiversity. It's the Black and Dyslexic Podcast.
Tune in next week, where we'll continue to bring you lived experiences and more unfiltered conversations with experts in the field around all things Black and dyslexic. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Black and Dyslexic podcast, where we educate, empower, and equip Black and underrepresented minorities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is partially funded by Morgan Cares and the Center for Urban Health Disparities Research and Innovation, awarded by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is sponsored by Dyslexia Advocation Incorporated, a 501c3 charitable organization located in Baltimore City, Maryland, whose mission is to equip parents of children with dyslexia and other language-based learning disabilities with the necessary tools to help their children become successful readers. You can find them on the web at www.soallcanread.org.